This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ever listen to this? Ever listen to this?
Now, that kind of talk this week dragged Australia's share market to
this
a two-year low.
There are, of course, complex Stephen reasons for that.
He was the big spender. Right. The big spender.
Doing the grocery shopping can take a huge chunk out of the family budget.
And that's finance.
Hello and welcome to Comedian versus Economist Summer Edition. Look, we'll be back with our usual programming on February the 2nd. But today we're going to continue where we left off last week, something a little bit different. We're looking back and exploring Thomas's origin story, like he's some sort of X-Men character. And this is the second part of an interview that we did recently with, or that Thomas did with some students of his old university, his old alma mater, the University of Queensland. Look, they say that university is a time of experimentation and self-discovery. It seems that Thomas experimented with being a massive nerd and discovered that he has a kink for spreadsheets. look, today we'll finish off that interview. We get to hear all about the fascinating places that Thomas's journey has taken him. Again, special thanks to Francisco and the team at University of Queensland Economic Society and the Worldonomics podcast. And remember, we'll be back with our usual schedule, Comedian versus Economist, on February the 2nd. Hope you enjoy the second part of this interview, and I'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Would you mind sharing a bit more about how it was your experience with the Sufi community?
Oh, that's a big question. That's a big question. It's amazing. It's quite hard to understand from a sort of Western cultural perspective. Like there's sort of one, you're living in Turkish culture, so that has a particular flavor. Can be like, I quite love it. It's very staunch. It can be really, it's very strong. And so that sort of comes into the spiritual practices as well. It's a very staunch and disciplined and regimented spiritual practice, but it's also very soft and loving, and it has this, and a real celebration of beauty. I think it's what I love, why I'm sort of more attracted to Sufism than, say, some of the Buddhism. Like, it's this real celebration of life and the blossoming color of life. And so I really love that. And I really love those two in combination, like a strong regimented discipline combined with a love of beauty as a spiritual practice. I really loved.
Oh, that's fantastic. It's super interesting.
I'm actually, do you mind if I ask, Francisco? Mm. I'm actually interested in the cabaret troupe. How did you get into that?
I was running a bunch of poetry and spoken word nights in Sydney on the side. So if I didn't do economics, I would have done literature and poetry at university. That would have been my thing. But I kind of always knew that, like, it's a career dead end, probably. Like, I don't, you know, like, I want to feel like I needed to set myself up in the world. Yeah. And so I was running sort of spoken word and these open mic nights and developing my own sort of material. And then, fell in with this crew who had a couple of gigs lined up right at these sort of big music festivals. And so they were doing auditions, and I said, oh, I've got these couple of poems, which are kind of like these rousing, inflammatory speeches, based on some of the Sufi stuff I was reading at the time. And they kind of dug it. And, so I became sort of like the poet MC of this troupe for a while.
That's so cool. That's such a random thing to like add to your career. I love that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I believe you were ghostwriting while you were traveling with part of the work you were doing. Like, how does that work? How was it working away from Australia? How did that help you?
Yeah, so when I was in Istanbul, I sort of set myself up there, and yes, I stayed 3 years, so I needed to sort of find a way to support myself. And I started teaching English to business people because I had a business background, which was super interesting as well. So I'd go around to like the CEO of Mavi Jeans, who produces jeans for all the big jeans labels out of Turkey, and I'd sit down and just chat with him in English. And that was my gig. So I'd learn about him and his lifestyle and his background. So it was super fascinating, but it was also a lot of hard work and required sort of busing all over Istanbul, which is a huge city. But it was about the time the internet was kicking off. The online work was becoming a thing. And so I got in onto a clearinghouse called Upwork. I don't know if you heard that one, upwork.com. But basically people go on there, post jobs that they need doing, and then you can apply and say, hey, I've got these skills, I can do that job. And then I noticed that there was a lot of jobs there for writers with a finance background, who could sort of speak like they knew the business world, and that's actually a really valuable skill. And it's quite hard to teach that. When I left the RBA, I interviewed at the AFR. They were doing a call out for jobs, and I got offered a job at the AFR. And their philosophy, I was talking to the editor, was that it's much easier to train someone with an economics background how to write than it is to train a writer how to think like an economist. And so that's really interesting. And so I found that's been true as well. Like with the ghostwriting and the writing I've done online, is that just having that ability to talk in that lexicon, to talk like a business person, like to, that you're confident about how a business works, how the economy works, how the trends that are affecting a business work, creates a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of opportunity for writers who can hold that voice. And so that's what I found. And then so I got into that kind of writing, and then got into ghostwriting in particular, because ghostwriting, I'm sure as you know, you're pretending that you're that person. They put their name at the end of it. So it has that sort of technical side, but then it also has the color, because you've got to present, you're doing relationship building. So it's sort of, it's content marketing. So it goes out on email lists or on the web or becomes searchable content that then creates a relationship between a potential customer and the brand identity. And so you need to be able to give that brand identity some flavor and give people a way to connect with it. And that's a creative exercise. And so I enjoy that side of it. Mm. So yeah, so I picked that up when I was over there, because it was a great way to work online and travel. And yeah, I've been doing it ever since. So yeah, it's been a sweet little gig.
That's really nice. And like, it's a lot of marketing too, right? You have to think, you're doing a lot of marketing with it.
Yeah. I've picked up a lot about awareness of how sales funnels and all of that work, just by being in that space and seeing the kind of stuff that the clients are asking for. Yeah, so that's been really interesting.
Well, I think your travels at a certain point got to an end and you came back to Australia, right? Mm. Your first project when you arrived back to Australia?
No. One of the first. Yeah, I can't remember exactly where that fits in. I've been involved for about 4 or 5 years. So it's a sustainability focused festival, sort of somewhere between a sustainability expo and a TED Talks festival. So we have a lot of panels and discussion topics, and we have, but in a sort of festival context. So big tents and lots of stuff going on. And yes, it's a really awesome festival. But they had identified the economics as one of the key streams that they wanted to focus on. So it's energy, biodiversity, humanity, renewal, economics, food production. And so seeing that these are the core themes that we need to advance on. And then so I sort of put my hand up and said, oh, I can help pull together an economics program. I've got some awareness of the characters in the space and that. So yeah, so I sort of came on board as a sort of the economics program coordinator 1 year, and then from there, the year after that, became the I guess you call program coordinator. So sort of looking at all those streams. And then we moved to sort of make it more interdisciplinary. So we had, initially it was like the economics program, it was just economics, but it was like, no, let's get the economists in with the farmers and get them in with the people in mental health frontline and get them all talking, because it's all kind of the same issues that we're looking at. Like it's such a multifaceted crisis that we're in right now. But it's all pushing at the same fronts, and you know, it's showing, the systems are showing up in different fields, but it all, you can find these common causes in it all. So we sort of moved to a more interdisciplinary focus, which has been really juicy.
So we also saw that you worked at the Center for Conservation Geography for a little bit. So what kind of research does the Center for Conservation Geography do, and kind of how does an economist contribute to that?
So the Center for Conservation Geography is a great little NGO, and it aims to provide research to support progressive conservation efforts around marine areas and marine life, particularly sort of marine protected areas and that sort of thing, helping create those. And then I was brought in to sort of build some economic arguments. So we were like a question like, if you created a no fish zone in a particular area, what impact does that have on, you know, the fishing industry in that area, but also then the tourism industry, those kind of things. So trying to sort of put a number on that. We tried to estimate the value of the scuba dive industry in Australia. There was no figures on that, but we knew that there's a lot of people doing scuba diving. We know that there's a lot of value in it, but it's not being captured in the sort of the trying to measure the economic benefits of a marine protected area. So we're trying to add some nuance to that. Yeah. So as an economist, you're trying to just put some numbers on these stories for like, this is what we think this is worth. This is why we think it should be protected. That's that sort of thing. So kind of telling that story, finding a way to build that argument. And that was really creative work actually, because the data is just not there. So like with that, trying to estimate the value of the scuba dive industry, there's no real data there. So it's like, how can we build this up? Like, what can we take scuba sales data? Can we try and find some data from that and then try scale it up? Like, okay, we know this one scuba shop in Sydney sells this much. Is there some reasonable assumptions that we could make that we could scale that up to be to something like a national number? Or what would be a reasonable range for, like, if we did scale that up, like how much certainty do we have about that? What's a reasonable range we could put on that? So it's quite creative thinking.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Moving to present day things after what sounds like an amazing and like genuinely exciting career from since uni, you are the principal at Integrity Economics down based in northern New South Wales. Are you able to tell us a bit about how your launch into Integrity Economics and the work you do with them now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Integrity Economics is sort of the name for my own brand. And so I don't have to hustle for work right now because I've got a steady stream of clients who just need the work on a regular basis. So, but back when I was hustling for work, you know, putting myself out there, then that was the unit, that was the sort of the brand face for me, if that makes sense. So yeah, because it just sounds better than, hey, it's me. I've got an organization here. So yeah, it's a bit of branding. Really. But yeah, so it's sort of putting myself out there, but also, yeah, it was a way to sort of put myself out there. So showcase the kind of work that I did and was wanting to do. And also at that time I was involved in an eco village project, and we were trying to develop the business case for that and trying to sell the benefits of the eco village concept. And so I was doing some modeling around that. And then, yeah, presenting that through the consultancy, through Integrity Economics, and saying like, this is the numbers that I'm coming up with. This is my website. Come talk to me if you want to explore these numbers more, or understand more where they're coming from. So that was sort of the drive behind that. But I'm kind of in a lucky situation now where that's sort of settled down. I've got the regular clients. If I need more work, I can kind of just hit them up, and they've got people who know who need work like that. So that, yeah, my client the other day said to me, says, look, I've got as much work as you want. So just let me know. So yeah, that's pretty sweet.
We're finally back to Comedian versus Economist now. you already said that before you get in contact with Alec and Bryce, you, Adam, did a few episodes, right? How did it work, and like, how was the decision of maybe teaming up with them to launch Comedian versus Economist?
It was a very easy sell. So we did six episodes as a pilot, and we've both got young kids, and so we're sort of squeezing it around all of that, and the content's reasonably easy because it's sort of work that it's stuff that I'm looking at already. It's reports that I'm writing already. So I'm mostly just leveraging work that I'm doing, and I'm pulling out interesting topics out of that, and Adam's asking some questions. So the content creation side's relatively easy, but the production side was hard, we were finding. So getting it edited properly, getting it out there. So we did those six episodes. We found the editing and production was taking a bit more time than we anticipated. It was a bit of a story. And then we, you know, were sitting on a podcast that had a listenership of maybe 50, 100 people, which was all our friends. And we're like, okay, so what's the next step here? How do we build this? And so it's like, oh, well, I guess we could, you know, have a marketing campaign, try and get ourselves out there, like, all this. And we're both like, are we really that into it? Like, I don't know if that sounds like quite a lot of work. And so with that, we've done six, let's just sit on it for a bit. We'll think about it. And it was kind of right about that time, Alec and Bryce put out a call saying like, we're looking for new content. You got any ideas, hit us up. And so we sent that to them and they listened to it and they loved it. And they're like, oh, this is great. Really, we want to get behind it if you guys want to share with it. And said, look, what we can do, you guys do the content, and we'll do all the production and the marketing. And we're like, ah, oh, sold. Like, that's great. That's all the stuff that we don't want to do. And so we've got the head of production there, Sasha, is amazing. So we just send her the raw files. We'll often just stop in the middle and go, oh, sorry, Sasha, we muffed that up. And we just go back and start again. And so we don't even touch it. So we just record it, send it to Sasha. She does an amazing job, whips it into shape, and the Equity Mates guys pump it out. So from our perspective, as puppers with, you know, busy lives already, it's super awesome. Like, yeah, I don't think we'd be able to do it without Equity Mates for sure.
Oh, that's great. It sounds like it's a platform that put you already somewhere very interesting. I remember that some time ago, either Alec or Bryce, they had to record with like a doona on top of them, but I don't think you've been through this process, right? I think you started already with a microphone. Can I say that?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I'm using a Yeti Blue, which is, I think it's $200. My brother uses a Rode. But this Yeti Blue, I love it. It's great. It's super portable. It sounds good. But sometimes I'm never under a doona, but last night I was out on the street because it was too noisy in the house. There was some the things going on. So yeah, no, it's still amateur hour. I know we sound professional, but yeah, we're still amateurs.
Oh, you definitely sound professional. I would recommend the microphone you have. And how is it working with your brother? Because like you guys were already planning to work together. Have you always been close, or it was something that popped up later in life?
Yeah, it's actually the best thing about it because we've both got young kids now under five. And then we just weren't talking to each other. He's in Adelaide. I'm in Mullumbimby, sort of near Byron Bay. And so, you know, we'd try to catch up and, you know, we'd try to go over and see each other sort of kind of semi-regularly, but you just don't really spend that much time together because you're just consumed by life. And so it's been really great to have this project, to sort of have this excuse to catch up once a week, because he's a really funny guy. Like, I love talking with him. And he's always cracked me up. You know, and not many people do. So I really love, having that chat with him. And yeah, and it's great to sort of see where his career has sort of gone in that sense. Like his story is really interesting. So he dropped out of year 11 in high school and got a job at the Apple store, like in 1996 it would have been or something. So before Apple was really a thing, set himself up as an Apple expert, which then went into this whole story. And now he's got this whole career around sort of identity management and in the IT space. So yeah, he's done really well, but yeah. And he had a stand-up comedy gig. So it was kind of funny. Like I was an economist who did poetry on the side, and he was an IT guy who did comedy on the side. And so yeah, comedian versus economist kind of pulls all four of those things together somehow. And makes it a thing, but yeah. So we've always, it's nice. I don't think we never would have planned it, but yeah, we're really happy that we're in it now.
We definitely can see the chemistry listening to the podcast. It's great. I think now wrapping up a little bit with our questions.
That's okay. So we're just getting to the end of our questions. So I think each of us kind of have specific questions, probably more tailored to people in uni, kind of just like your advice. So what is something that you kind of wish you knew before entering into the workforce?
I wish that I had some idea of what 9-to-5 work was like. Like I was totally blindsided by that when I started work. That, you know, like when I was at university, like I was a night owl. So a lot of people would relate to this, but I'd study late. I would do most of my study between 10 and 2 in the morning. And then the mornings were always pretty slow and cramming as well. That's the other thing. Like, so I'd have a busy social life leading up through most of the semester, and then just go really, really hard. I would not drink coffee all semester, just so that when exams hit, I could just hit the coffee and it would have maximum impact. And I'd just go super hard. That approach doesn't work in the workforce. Like I found it just being on deck at 9 o'clock in the morning was just such a struggle for me early on. Like I couldn't even get a hand. And I was falling asleep in meetings. Like it was just kind of embarrassing. Like, yeah. Yeah. So I kind of wish I had some like bit more experience of that before I hit the RBA, before I hit that first job straight out, that I had done something through that summer, just like get in the groove of having a 9-to-5 steady job, getting up regular hours. Because that gear shift was a real struggle for me.
It really does. Oh, sorry, Marty.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I find that so funny because I think that's backwards to what I do as someone who's a massive coffee drinker, and I come to exam time and the coffee sort of doesn't have its effectiveness and I need to move on to other things like energy drinks. I know you said it wasn't advice, but I'm going to take it as advice. What sort of tips do you have for students who are in economics now? Like, would you frame it around, say, econometrics or game theory, as you mentioned earlier, or is there like a part of economics that you think might be more valuable than others, or just general interest?
I think it's good to follow your passions. I think I probably did more econometrics than I needed to, and I probably should have, because I just wasn't really that suited to statistics. And the modeling, that's, I didn't really love that. I got into game theory and thinking about that really sparked, you know, that fitted me. So I did probably more than I needed to. And even then, when I got out into the world, a lot of it, the professors are going to hate me saying this, but a lot of it's computer based now. So you can kind of, any monkey can drive it, really. At a certain level, like if you want to sort of get into, you know, develop your own models and do academic work, and you really need to understand it. But in an applied sense, I think you don't need all that much. So I think you definitely need it, and you definitely need to be numerate. I think that's really what, you know, gives you an advantage as an economist and allows you to step into different worlds, is that you can talk about growth rates and understand what that means, and be able to compare growth rates and think about percentage changes and that sort of things. And that's not super complex, but it's like, if you can get quick with that, you get snappy with that and kind of quickly see how that works, then that really sets you up well, I think. So definitely pay attention to that side. Definitely get how statistics work. Like, if there's one book I'd recommend, it's Daniel Kahneman's Thinking Fast and Slow. You know that one. So Daniel Kahneman won the Nobel Prize a while back, but Thinking Fast and Slow is an amazing book. And it's just about how bad humans are about thinking about probability in statistics. So that's just a great life practice, to be able to think about probability and understand, you know, the likelihood of winning the lottery, or what one in 100 million actually means. So do that. But then I think follow your interests, and there's a lot of ways that can go. And I think like fundamentally as an economist, you're a storyteller, like you're telling stories, and all of your characters are data and pieces of the economy. And so like the work that I do, ghostwriting, or even with Comedian versus Economist, it's all storytelling. And your strength as an economist is your ability to sort of like pull all these different moving pieces of the puzzle into a coherent narrative. And it's that narrative that sells. And so even at the bank, even though, like, obviously with the ghostwriting and the content marketing stuff I do, it's all about the narrative. But even at the RBA, it's very much a narrative. It's like, you know, full-time jobs are down this month. This means this, which is going to mean that. And it's that coherent sort of narrative that moves through that allows you to, is your strength, is what you're selling to the market. And so I think like, yeah, so following that interest, learning how the stories work, being able to tell those stories, get versed in telling those stories, I think will set you right.
That is great. Yeah. So for the book, if people paying attention, they're thinking fast and slow, definitely a big recommendation. That's excellent. I think that's it, Thomas. Thank you so much for making time and being here for our interview. It was great. It's such a prolific career you have, and so many things you've done in life. We were really excited to have you here. Thank you so much.
No, thanks for having me. Yeah, no, it's been great to connect. Like I was saying just before, like I organized a bunch of barbecues for the Economic Society back in the 90s. So it's great to see it's kicking on and going from strength to strength. So yeah, well done, guys.
There you go, guys. That wraps up Thomas's interview with University of Queensland Economic Society. Hope you found it interesting. I certainly did, particularly the bit where he said he really enjoyed us spending time together. Everyone has their own opinion, I suppose. Don't forget, we'll be back with our regular Comedian versus Economist podcast on February the 2nd. We do have some more special episodes coming up for you over the summer. Thomas has hosted some panel discussions from a festival that he was recently involved in. Some really interesting stuff coming up there. So make sure you stay tuned throughout the summer for more of those. And as I say, we'll be back on February the 2nd for more Comedian versus Economist. Talk to you then.
Comedian vs. Economist is a product of Equity Mates Media. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Comedian vs. Economist are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the Equity Mates website where you can find ASIC resources and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media and the hosts of Comedian vs. Economist acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.